Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Good afternoon. This is Jay Armour coming to you live from deep in the mountains of the Missouri Ozarks on Sunday, the 9th day of May, 2010. Welcome to the John Moore Show. Well, today we're going to have a couple of guests, one each hour. Our first guest this first hour is a gentleman I've known for a short while, about 5 months or so. Mr. Dan Sutterfield has had a career building thin-shelled concrete domes, of all things. And we're going to be talking about thin-shelled concrete domes. We'll be talking about what they are, why they're so wonderful, and how people can learn to build their own if they choose to. We've got this first break coming up here pretty quick, and I know Dan's on hold. But let's just go ahead and jump right in here. Dan, are you there, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay, Dan, welcome aboard.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Yes, sir. Now, I was at my website. I guess you probably saw the link at my website, or did you?
Yes, we keep an eye on it every day.
Okay. Well, we now have a link to Dome School of America. And the first two schools for this year have been set up July 19th through July 31st. In August 16th through the August 28th, and 12 days. It's going to be pretty intense, isn't it?
Yes, it's completely comprehensive. We won't leave anything out intentionally, I'll guarantee you.
Well, you and I have talked about this before, and apparently there have been some less than scrupulous, shall we say, or possibly less than ethical people claiming to do what you're doing, but then leaving out essential parts, weren't they?
Well, after we had gone through what's available and got out there and attended the School of Hard Knocks, and that's putting it mildly, we realized that there was...
Dan, hold on. We got a call coming up, Dan, and everybody stay tuned. We'll be right back.
All right.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're back. This is J.R. Moore. It is Sunday, the 9th day of May, 2010. Dan Sutterfield, are you there, sir?
Yes, sir.
All right. Now, Dan, I know because we've talked about this extensively and looking at this curriculum here that this school is the best of its nature being offered anywhere in the United States. There's no doubt in my mind, and I'm sure there's no doubt in your mind either, is there?
No, sir, absolutely not.
We've put together... Of course, and here's the features of it. Making an air form, that's F-O-R-M, that's the form that holds up the structure while it's being built. Construction of the dome base with floor. Now, I should mention people will be building a 346-square-foot transportable dome structure made of lightweight shotcrete. This could be put on a flatbed truck and moved, couldn't it?
Yes, sir.
And what's the diameter of this little dome?
Well, it's about 16 feet, I believe, but then one side of it has been cut off to make it back to 12 foot wide so it's easily transportable. Okay. And then two of them are connected together at the job site, or at the
house
site. All
right. So that's okay. That sounds like a good way to do that. And you do the full construction of the dome unit with troweled and sponge-floored interiors, then attachment of molded overhangs and textured finishing of the exterior of the structure. This sounds pretty exciting. And where is this taking place at?
It'll be up in northern Minnesota, a little town called Fauston.
Okay, and there's lodging just a few minutes away and restaurants and so forth. People can have a nice place to stay and get some meals, right?
Right, it's only about 5 miles away.
Okay. Now, I'm going to Minnesota myself here a week from today, and that's a beautiful time of year to be up there. That you can not have to worry about being Nanook of the North.
As long as you got your insect repellent, you're okay.
Well, that's true in most of the country that time of year.
Oh, yeah.
Now, you've built a number of dome homes yourself, haven't you?
Yes, sir, I have. I started in 99.
And so you're bringing your expertise to the table. Tell us about the other instructor.
Well, the other instructor's name is Dave. Oh, this is ridiculous.
David Holmes.
David Holmes. Very good. Yes, I've known David for a number of years. He's going to kick me for that one. David and I worked together whenever I first started.
Try not to think that there's 50,000 people listening to us, Dan.
Yeah, I understand that. This is a little different than standing in front of a classroom, John.
I know. But you've known David all these years, and you two are going to split up these duties between the two of you.
Yeah, we'll change off, and when they get tired of me, they can go to him and vice versa.
Right. Now, basically, these students up there are going to be doing classroom work and hands-on construction, both, won't they?
Oh, yeah. This is designed to... I mean, you could sit in and just watch if you wanted to, but it's designed to get in there and get your hands dirty and get your hands on all the equipment, and some of the equipment isn't readily used in most types of construction. There's no magic to this construction, but there's definite techniques and procedures that you need to follow to come out with a decent result.
Right.
These domes have been built strictly by hand with trowels, but that's a little more labor intensive and time involved than most people have to invest. And with the right equipment, you can do them in a timely manner and do an absolutely beautiful job that, even though they don't look normal initially when a newcomer will come up on one that's never seen it or been in one, once they've looked at the final result, and if they've got whether they've got mechanical understanding of what actually went into it or not, they can appreciate it.
Right. Now, tell us about the tornado rating and the earthquake ratings on
that. Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, we've been brought up in boxes our whole life, and when a tornado comes, if you don't have a specific shelter to get in and it hits the house, it's going to go away. And to give you an idea, a Force 5 tornado has right at 300-mile-an-hour winds. They think that's about as fast as the winds can be in a tornado. That's
right.
The worst it could be.
Right.
And 300-mile-an-hour winds puts 400 pounds per square foot on a building.
Okay.
And if you have a traditional stick-built wooden house, or even a steel-framed house of lightweight steel studs and steel joists, I'll go back to the wood. A wood truss in this part of the country, I'm in Missouri, has a stamp on the side of the truss in numerous places, and the stamp reads 40 PSF. That means 40 pounds per square foot. In other words, when that truss is on the roof with all of its brothers and sisters standing there braced and sheeted and ready for Mother Nature,
right,
that roof will take 40 pounds per square foot day in, day out, combination wind, snow, ice, whatever, and it'll do a good job for the life of the building, which is somewhere past 50 years normally.
Right.
And if you apply 90 pounds per square foot to that roof or the building, it will fail.
Right.
That's the approximate number when the building fails is 90 pounds per square foot. So if a tornado would come along with anything over that, or just a straight wind, that building is probably going to fail, and it'd be best if you weren't in it.
Exactly.
Okay, now, the domes, the thin shell concrete domes that have had to be tested for strength before they would grant occupancy, like churches and schools where the general public might go in.
Right.
The weakest they've ever had one test is over 2,000 pounds per square foot.
Amazing.
Yes. And with that in mind, you can look somebody straight in the eye, not feel like you're leading them on, and tell them that these thin shell concrete domes are at least 2.5 times stronger than a Force 5 tornado. That's not to say that a window couldn't be broken by debris, but the structure itself will be there, and that's proven itself up through at least Force 3 tornadoes.
Now, when they do their calculations, do they calculate heavy objects being picked up by 200, 300 mile an hour winds and being tossed about?
That has been tested, and what happens if, and that would be a specific force in a very small concentrated area.
Right.
You know, you hear every now and then about a 75-pound chunk of ice hitting the house, and it goes right on through into the basement if there is one. It doesn't even slow down.
Right.
Well, yeah, they have tested these that way, and what happens if an extremely heavy chunk, like a motor block, let's say, I can't think of too many things stronger or denser than that other than a piece of rock, but if a cast iron motor block, for God's sakes, whatever fall from the sky and hit one of these, it is possible that it could punch a hole in it.
Right.
I'm not saying that couldn't happen, but it won't affect the strength of the entire building.
Right, so the rest of the structure would remain intact even though a hole got punched in it.
There were actually some of these thin-shell concrete domes in Germany during World War II, and they used them as factories. They weren't insulated, and they weren't built the same way that we build them today, but the structure was virtually the same, the finished product was, and when we would fly over and bomb it, the bomb would punch a hole in the building. Needless to say, you didn't want to be inside when the bomb went off.
Right.
But even after the bomb exploded, the building still stood. They'd go back in, clean it up, and keep going, you know?
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. And now, I got a client I'm working with out in Washington State. They're talking about possibly burying these structures. How do they handle that?
That's absolutely no problem. In fact, the structure, the way we traditionally build it above grade, would probably take a reasonable amount of depth burying. And once you're there on the job site, I mean, like you were mentioning before, what we'll teach in the school is the construction of a transportable version. But needless to say, everything that we teach could be applied to one built on the job site.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Just exactly the same techniques, except that you probably wouldn't go the expense of the lightweight concrete. By lightweight, that's relatively lightweight. Instead of 125 pounds per cubic foot, it'll come in about 70 pounds per cubic foot. So it's still quite heavy, and it's still quite stable. It just saves a little bit of grunt on the crane and a little bit less aggravation for the transporters.
Exactly. Now, is the floor made with the same shotcrete?
Yes, sir. Of course, the floor probably wouldn't be sprayed. It would be poured, but it still would be the lightweight concrete.
How thick would that be?
The floor would probably end up to be about 3 inches thick with some stiffener beams cast in with it.
All right.
And it's all, of course, got the rebar and everything according to the engineer specs.
Mm-hmm.
We're not engineers. We don't have a thing against engineers or architects. We would fall into the category, my buddy and I, as designer builders.
Right.
And we listen to the engineers, and if they say it needs to be such and such thickness or a certain schedule on rebar, we don't argue with that. We give it at least that, sometimes more.
Okay. So, all right.
Back up just a second there, John. Burying these things has been done before. That's not a new idea. I'm sure you realize that. And they've been buried at least 30 feet deep.
Everybody stay tuned. We got a break from it. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Is taking your telephone calls right now on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Pick up the phone and join in the conversation. Call 1-800-313-9443. That's 1-800-313-9443. And thanks for listening to RBN.
All right. We're back, ladies and gentlemen. We're back. This is J.R. Moore. It is Sunday, the 9th day of May, 2010. Welcome back to the John Moore Show. We had a caller asking off-air how to spell Sutterfield. That's S-U-T-T-E-R-F-I-E-L-D. And, Dan, let's get some information, more details out on the school. What is the tuition here looks like $3,600 with half paid at the time of the registration and a balance due at the date of the school starts, July 19th.
Right.
And you'll take check, credit card, PayPal, or money order. Not taking cash?
I think we still take Federal Reserve notes.
Okay. Well, that
for a while.
I would not suggest anybody put Federal Reserve notes in the mail. That's a reasonable, for a professional seminar of this nature, that's actually a fairly reasonable fee, and what I would expect to pay anybody for the nearly 2 week long seminar for 12 days. Now, each day we're going to have a working man's lunch with two snack times of assorted drinks and snacks, and a course outline notebook will be provided to everybody, a special industry source presentations to enhance technical excellence, technical assistance over the phone for your future product at no charge. That's wonderful. Interaction time each day to discuss our day's work. That'll be towards the end of the day, I would expect. And then a list of industry suppliers and companion businesses that will improve your success. And Sunday is a day off with a trip to Itasca State Park, headwaters of the Mississippi River, and a picnic. Sounds like a really fun time, and good people, and learn a lot of good information.
It'll be intense. But
it will be. But we got a first caller on hold here. Leo in Massachusetts. Go ahead, Leo.
Thank you for taking the call. On your lightweight Crete, is it? Do you use a lightweight aggregate mix in there?
Yes, sir. There is a ceramic type aggregate that's involved in that. It's quite a complex design, and that was researched and perfected by David Holmes. I'm not
in what percentage of volume is the aggregate versus the sand concrete cement mix?
Oh, buddy, I wish I could answer that. In all sincerity, I'm not up on that like David Holmes is, and he'll be on this show in the future. So if you would be kind enough to follow it and get back when he's interviewed, I'm sure he could tell you right down to the grain of sand what's in it.
Well, but I have more than that. Now, this is a bifurcated two semicircular, semispherical units.
Repeat that, please.
Is this a cut-in-half semicircle, cut-in-half semicircle globe type, sort of like a yurt? Is that what you're talking about? It's cut-in-half?
Well, it's not really cut in half, no, sir. If you could get to the website of the school, and he's got some floor plans
Leo, if you want to, Leo, you can go to my website, thelibertyman.com, and click on the link there.
How do you shut the noise off when you turn on your site?
The noise?
Yeah, whatever sound that comes from your site.
There shouldn't be any sound coming from my site anymore. Maybe it's been a while since you've been there.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah,
I was wondering if you could make it in smaller segments that were interlocking, that it could be just as easily tornado-proof, depending upon the design. But is it basically, do you use the rods, a rebar and mesh as a part of it?
Well, we use rebar. We haven't been using mesh. And
What supports it in between the rebars?
You say what's in between the rebar?
Yeah.
He wants to know what supports it in between the rebar, Dan.
Well, the rebar is on approximately a 1 foot grid both ways, and the shotcrete fills in behind it, in between it, and over it. The rebar is approximately in the center of the shotcrete shell.
Oh, so is the shell only done on one side, or do you pack it in?
Well, we haven't talked about the actual construction of the thin shell domes. What we do, in the transportable version, you would pour the floor first. If you had a a job where you were on a permanent house site, let's say, and you were building one that's too large to be transportable, you wouldn't put the floor in. You would start with the footing more. This gets a little involved, but I'll give you the basics here. You would put the footing in first. You would attach the airform to the footing, and you would inflate it with a squirrel cage fan. And then you would go in through an airlock, and you would spray 3 to 4 inches of industrial-grade polyurethane foam on the inside of the fabric. Then you would proceed to block in where you want your doors and windows with treated wood. There's a number of ways to do that. And then you would spray a pre-shell of concrete on the inside of the foam, approximately an inch thick. After that, you would hang your grid of rebar, both horizontal and vertical, right up next to that pre-shell, through some...
We got a break, Dan. We got a break. Okay. Hold on. Leo, hold on. Everybody stay tuned. We'll be back right after the break.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Back, ladies and gentlemen, we're back. This is J.R. Moore. It is Sunday, the 9th day of May, 2010, and we were having a fascinating discussion off air here. And Leo, are you still there, sir?
Yeah.
Okay. And we were talking about the engineering of the Liberty ships in World War II that were built to concrete. Most people don't know that, do they, Leo?
Well, how much of the superstructure was it? Strictly the superstructure, and everything else was welded in?
On the Liberty ships?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just the hull, I believe, and then everything else is welded in. They needed ships really big, really fast, and they made them out of concrete. Pretty amazing. But now the technique that we're using here is a bit different, where we spray the concrete with kind of push out a hose, don't we, Dan?
Yeah, it's a piston pump that pumps the concrete through a hose. And then when it gets to a nozzle, it's kind of a slurry, but it's relatively stiff. And when it gets to the nozzle, we inject air, quite a bit of air, actually, and that breaks up the concrete and sprays a nice uniform pattern at a high enough velocity to drive in and around the rebar, eliminating any voids. And it does an incredibly good job. And your caller's concern about it not having mesh... If a guy wanted to put some mesh there and shoot through that, it wouldn't hurt a thing, but I don't think he'd be disappointed with the strength of the finished product the way we do it.
And we gave, off air, we gave Leo a referral to a place not too far from him, Massachusetts, he can go visit and see firsthand.
Yep.
Leo, does that pretty much answer your questions?
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, we appreciate it. And we got a regular call here, soon to be the owner of a Swiss LX bicycle, John in Florida.
Yes, question. I've in the 90s, I was involved in building swimming pools, and I knew that they used shotcrete, but they actually went to what they call a gunite, which is they spray it out of the hose, and it worked a lot better. Is this would be the same thing, pretty much?
Well, yes and no. The shotcrete industry now refers to the two types of spraying concrete as dry shotcrete and wet shotcrete. They've evolved to calling it that and trying to make that an industry standard. And the gunite, the term gunite is now referred to as dry shotcrete. What they do is blow a mix of aggregate and cement through the hose with air. It's relatively dry, and then they add water at the nozzle.
Really?
Yeah, and the only downfall with that is we're spraying everything horizontal and overhead in these domes, and you get a lot more of what the industry calls rebound. That's particles, aggregate, or whatever that doesn't stick. It bounces off. And with the gunite system, you get a lot more rebound. With the shotcrete system, you're actually pumping a slurry of cement and aggregate that's relatively dry. It's down. It could be down to 1 inch of slump, and slump is a whole nother story. But it's totally hydrated, but there's no extra water in it to speak of.
Mm-hmm.
And we pump that through the hose, and then when it gets to the nozzle, we add air to break it up and transfer the mix to the work to the actual position where we want it to end up.
Yeah,
so
I know that the gunite
your question
really
again, I know they started using gunite. A lot of it was used for making swimming pools.
Mm-hmm.
And you felt like the gunite was better than the shotcrete?
Oh, well, maybe for swimming pool, because the guys could form it into a bench.
They can do the same thing with the wet mix.
Mm-hmm.
The big trick is you don't make it too wet.
Mm-hmm.
See, the gunite, the big advantage of gunite was you could adjust your water at the nozzle and make it as dry or as wet as you want. The problem with gunite is you still get a lot more rebound, especially when you're spraying overhead.
Mm-hmm.
With the shotcrete, you can get your rebound down to if everything's working right, and it can you can be down to less than 5% rebound with the wet mix shotcrete.
Now, the one thing about gunite, I know it's very porous, and water will basically just soak right through it until they plaster it.
It won't do that with this shotcrete. We're shooting 8.5 to 9 sacks per cubic yard mix, and that is quite rich in cement, and there's other additives that we put in it, and it's not porous. Not like you're speaking of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well,
you're right. It can be, but we don't shoot it so it'll be porous. Not to that extent.
And answer your questions, John?
Yes, I understand that now. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. We appreciate your call. And another call on hold here, Alan in Arkansas. Go ahead, Alan.
Hi, John. Good afternoon, Mr. Sutterfield. I have a couple quick questions for you. Hope you can answer and somebody else can get on yet. Did I miss the durability of the structure in earthquakes?
No, we actually
didn't. You didn't miss it. We didn't talk about it. Go ahead, Dan.
Okay, and then the other question I had, maybe you could hit... I'd like to preserve vehicles. Has anybody ever tried putting a single wide garage door? Obviously, you want to reinforce it more than the standard stuff out there. Has anybody ever tried that?
You mean build a structure strictly just to protect a vehicle?
Yes.
Well, they've sure done it for protecting human beings, so I can't imagine it would not protect a vehicle.
Okay.
John, I'm sure you remember when it's been about 3, 4, maybe 5 years ago, a tornado ripped through Missouri and totally destroyed downtown of Stockton, Missouri, and Pierce City, Missouri.
I was in Stockton a week before the tornado, and I was in Stockton a week after the tornado. And
what do you think?
It's very humbling to see what God can do.
That will put the fear of God in you. I mean, I saw pictures and I heard stories. And I was told, and from what I could pick up, that those towns were literally flattened, the downtown area.
Well, Stockton had your typical 1900 downtown with 2- and 3-story brick buildings all up and down Main Street. And it was a beautiful old downtown with those kind of structures. And it was gone. It was just flat. It was just flat gone.
Okay, the reason I bring that up about... 25 to 30 miles from there, maybe, don't quote me on that, there's a lady that had one of these built while I was out of state building another one. I don't get them all, of course. I didn't, by any means. But I had the privilege of going to that dome and visiting it, of course, after the tornado. And she said that her and her daughter and grandkids were in that building and saw it coming across the field. She's up on a rise. She can see pretty good.
Right.
And they had no place to go, and they knew that would be the safest. So they got away from the windows, up against the wall, the exterior wall, And that tornado totally engulfed that house. And if I remember, and I actually heard this from her, it wasn't like I read this part. She said it seemed like forever, but it was probably 30 seconds at the most. And then it, after it left her house, it just kept ripping and tearing right on across the field, destroying barns and whatever. And it didn't even break a window, which was somewhat of that. That part's almost a miracle.
Right.
But all she had was scratches on that building, and she said it kind of hummed and vibrated a little, but there weren't any cracks or any damage other than superficial scratches.
Amazing. Now, let's talk about seismic resistance here.
Yeah.
That's one of Alan's questions.
The engineers that have studied these, and there's been a number of them, they give them a rating of seismic zone 4. And I'm not a seismologist or a geologist or anything, but to put that in layman's terms, about the only way a tornado would destroy, an earthquake would destroy this building is if you were unfortunate enough to build it on the fault line.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But what happens, it's one piece, and it shakes as a unit. Now, you might end up with things off of the wall. You might end up with an interior wall cracking, but the actual shell itself, if it's built to the engineer specs, and we always do that, it should sustain virtually anything that can be thrown at it, unless you were just right literally on the fault line and it could slide in or something.
Alan, you got any other questions?
No, that's it. Thank you very much.
Okay, we appreciate the call. And we're getting a lot of calls here. Blue from Tennessee. Go ahead, Blue.
Hey, I've got one question, and I've missed part of the show. But I just wanted to ask how they are jointed together and how you prevent leakage.
How
good
you would
question.
Make sure that when you join the portable ones, they wouldn't leak?
Right.
Well, the material that we would, well, first of all, they would be bolted together just as strong as if it was made in one piece. And, of course, we're only talking about the portable ones here. And then the joint, needless to say, where they come together is somewhat of a valley. And the same material that we coat the outside with is used to reinforce and coat the joint. Now, let's back up just a minute, if you don't mind, John.
Go ahead.
You know, we're one of the few countries on the planet that use tar paper for roofs.
Really?
Now, some people call it shingles. I call it glorified tar paper. And asphalt shingles just aren't much protection. And all you have to do is look around your community every year at the houses that get their shingles replaced because a hailstone the size of a quarter beat little holes in it, and they were
right.
Only 5 to 10 years old.
Right.
Most of the world doesn't use asphalt shingles. They use either metal roofing, and you see a lot more people going to metal because metal roofing could be beat to death almost with a ball-peen hammer, and it still won't leak.
Right, right.
And other countries use tile. Of course, when you go to concrete or clay tile, you have to have a much stronger roof.
Right.
But the material that we use to coat these domes is as good a quality as is produced. We're not after the low dollar, get by, see in a year, that's all it's guaranteed, good luck sucker type material, because
right,
there's a
right.
lot of that out there.
Right.
We just don't do that. The polyurethane coating that we use on the outside of these is extremely tough and durable, and to get 25 to 30 years out of it would not be a stretch of good,
right.
durable life and protection for your building.
Okay, Blue, does that answer your question?
I think it did. Thank you very
much. We appreciate it. Okay, now these two schools coming up. The first school coming up is July 19th to July 31st. The next school following that would be just about a month later, August 16th to August 28th. And maybe some later schools later in the year that's to be announced. So what do people need to bring with them when they come up for the school, Dan?
Liniment for sore muscles? No, we're not going to overwork them. But we definitely want them to get in and handle the shotcrete hose and tie the steel and we're going to show them techniques of building these airforms that's just not readily available out there. And something else I'd like to mention too, John, is the fact that David and I have talked many, many hours on how this should be done and done the best, and we've decided that we won't take over 12 students in a session.
Okay.
If we take more than that, we can't do the students justice, and they can't actually get the time they need to walk away from this and feel like they can do a good job.
Yeah, well, if it was 12 students or less, everyone will get hands-on experience.
Absolutely.
Cutting rebar, tying rebar, putting the foam up, putting the shotcrete, and the rest of it, correct?
And plenty of instruction on how to build these airforms. And without that, they could read a book, you know. I mean, there's not any books out there that I know that actually tell you how to do this, sincerely, but... That's one of the situations. There's just not a lot of information.
Building airforms has me fascinated. These are building the airforms done on the job site?
Absolutely.
Really?
Yep.
Okay. Well, I assume you get some kind of fabric that's, what, 8 feet or 10 feet wide? And
No, it's not that wide. It has to be seamed. You put it together kind of like segments of an orange. You could think of it that way.
Okay. And how wide is the raw material?
I believe it's about 52 inches.
Okay, so a little more, about 4.5 feet or so.
Yeah, something like that.
And then you have a pattern, like you'd have a pattern for making a coat or a dress or something. And...
Right, and we'll teach them how to make the pattern depending on the shape and the profile, or the size and the profile of the dome they want.
And how do you seal the seams?
Well, the seams are actually coated from the inside once the thing is partially inflated.
Really?
Yes. And the reason we go to that system is because the coating that we use is totally compatible with the urethane foam that's sprayed on it.
Okay.
And if you're not careful and don't pick a coating, choose very carefully a coating, then you can have compatibility issues between the urethane foam and the coating.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you have to just about be a chemist to do this.
Well, you at least have to be able to talk to the people that make these coatings and make sure what you're doing, or you'll have trouble on down the line, which is
Well, that's part of going taking the school, is that people get told the right way to do it so they can avoid these mistakes.
You're going to benefit from quite a few years of experience.
Absolutely. I need to pay a bill or two here before we go any further and talk about my friend Freeze Dry Guy. During the month of May, Freeze Dry Guy's rewards program is offering 25% back in survival bucks on any purchase. Your survival bucks can be applied to purchase of three product lines: number 10 cans of heirloom seeds, number 10 cans of freeze-dried food, and number 10 cans of dehydrated food. Now, ladies and gentlemen, the heirloom seeds is a new deal for Freeze Dry Guy. He'll take orders in advance. He won't begin deliveries until June 15th with a maximum of 3 cans per household. You get the details at his website, freezedryguy.com, or calling his toll-free number, 866-404-3663. I say again, 866-404-3663. And, of course, there is a link from my website, thelibertyman.com, and I need to remind you, this offer expires May 31st. Okay, Dan, getting back with all this, you'll be one of the instructors. What time of day will the class start?
I believe we're going to fire it off at 8 o'clock in the morning, and it'll be a long day.
Well, we've got a short time right now. We've got a break coming up. Everybody stay tuned. We'll be back after the break.
With John Moore.
Now, if you want to talk to John live on the air, call 1-800-313-9443. That's 1-800-313-9443.
All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. This year, it is Sunday, the 9th day of May. Dan, we're just about out of time here. I got a caller off the air that asked a question, and I think maybe best if you just listen.
Sure.
The caller asking about electromagnetic pulse protection, EMP protection, which we also, in my business, call Tempest Secure. What you would do here, Dan, you may help me with engineering, take either copper screen or aluminum screen wire and incorporate it into the structure to have it be seamless. And, of course, the windows and doors would have to have a similar mesh or a screen inside of it, or to where if you wanted the windows to be part of it, obviously the windows would have to be. You'd have to have shutters with a screen mesh also of some kind to make the entire building electromagnetic pulse proof. And I think that could be done fairly easily, don't you, Dan?
It could be. I'm sure it would if you use copper, it would raise the price somewhat. But from what I understand, the building is pretty much considered a Faraday cage. And I'm not an electronics expert by any means, but unless you have a radio fairly close to a window, you don't get real good reception inside. You need an external antenna.
Well, in a room or building that's been set up as a Faraday cage or a Tempest Secure, when you close the door, the radio goes off. I've seen this in front of me. Aluminum mesh is just about as good as copper, and if you overlap it so that there's no seams, no place for the EMP to get through, I think you would have a fairly nice, tight EMP-proof structure, keeping in mind the windows would need to be secured and the door is secured in the
sure.
same manner. So that can be addressed and very effectively. Dan, you have a good radio voice, and you did a good time here your first time out of the box. And I'll be talking to David and get him on the air with us in a week or two. I'll be off the air next week myself. I'm taking a little trip to Minnesota. But we'll get David on here in a couple of weeks and interview him about the school also.
Even touched on energy efficiency yet.
We haven't. It's amazing how fast an hour can go, isn't it?
It's amazing.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you can get details on my website, thelibertyman.com, about the school, where it is, how much it costs, and contact information for Dan Sutterfield and David Holmes. And I don't want to be cut off with the music here at the last moment, Dan, so I'm going to thank you now for your time. And we'll be talking soon and get you back on the air and David back on the air also.
Great. Thanks, John, and thanks for
the
callers.
Jeff. Okay, we appreciate it. All right, well, these are exciting times. These larger, even the small ones, the structure will pay for itself in energy savings in about 20 years. And these school districts are finding it out. There's a school district just a half-hour drive from where I'm sitting here. They now have three of these huge domes. They're using for auditoriums and whatever else, what their purpose is, I'm not sure. But these large domes will pay for themselves. Big enough for a high school gymnasium, they'll pay for themselves in 20 years just by the energy savings. That's not counting the seismic resistance, the resistance to tornadoes and straight-line winds and so forth. Same thing applies to your home. The energy savings, if you build a 1,000-square-foot or 2,000-square-foot home, the energy savings will pay for it in about 20 years. Right, coming up, we've got another special guest in a moment. You stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back. This is J.R. Moore on Sunday, the 9th day of May, 2010, coming to you live from deep in the mountains of the Missouri Ozarks. And we have a second special guest this hour, a young lady named Angela Clark. Angela represents Mobile Mini, and I am representing Mobile Mini. If you go to my website, thelibertyman.com, you'll see a new banner up there that talks about these Connexes, as we sometimes call them, shipping containers. And there's a lot going on in this industry, and Angela is in the middle of it and very knowledgeable about all the details of what these folks are doing. Angela, are you there, my dear?
Yes, Jr. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's good to have you here and taking some time from your Sunday afternoon. I call them Connexes. What do you call them?
I typically go with container, but certainly a lot of people call them Connexes, so familiar with that as well.
Well, that aside for a moment, these have been around for decades. The standard two sizes are 8x8, that's 8 feet wide, 8 feet tall by 20 feet, and 8x8 by 40 feet. But there's other sizes people can get, aren't there?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The smallest one that we carry is 8 foot wide, 8 foot tall, and 10 feet in length. And those are, you know, everything that isn't an 8x20 and an 8x40 are things that we have custom built with Mobile Mini. So,
I thought I saw somewhere 10 feet wide, you get them 10 feet wide.
Yeah, and those are actually not something we've modified. Those are something that we build from the ground up, and we have those in a couple of different sizes. We have those in the 10 wide. They're 8.5 feet tall and either 18 or 25 feet in length. So those are really nice.
Really?
Uh-huh. Particular units come standard with doors on both ends as well. So.
Well, that'd be big enough you could park a car in there and actually open the door and get out, couldn't you?
Absolutely. Kind of just drive it through like a tunnel. Absolutely, sir.
Because I've certainly thought about that. We're going to have our first break here momentarily. And there it is. Angela, hold on, everybody. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Ladies and gentlemen, we're back. This is J.R. Moore. It is Sunday, the 9th day of May, 2010. Well, we don't have all the time in the world. We've got about 50 minutes is what we have. But we're going to talk about these containers and learn as much about them as we can in the next 50 minutes. Are you still there, Angela?
Yes, I am.
Okay, fantastic. Now, people need to know there's lots of ways that they can get what they need here from just a simple basic container, which now Mobile Mini, when they are picking ones that they're going to purchase, what criteria do they go through in making their purchase decisions?
Well, something that's obviously very important and typically important to either the people who are purchasing or buying these containers or Connexes from us, JR, is that they're wind and water tight. So we are looking for the water seals on the doors to be intact. If they aren't on a container or a Connex, obviously we would replace those. And then structural integrity. We want to make sure that they are, you know, structurally sound with the floors, so the walls and roofs, you know, in not leaking or dented condition.
These containers are built of a type of steel that doesn't rust, Corten steel, I believe, aren't they?
They're 16 gauge steel on the exterior. They do rust in some instances. Mobile Mini has a fleet of containers that are very well kept. We pride ourselves in having very presentable looking containers, and also again structurally sound. So they are painted typically, but rust isn't an issue as far as a structural problem.
Now, and so these aren't just the basic red container. Does Mobile Mini paint them before they deliver them?
Yeah, absolutely. The containers that we sell that are actually of our lease fleet, meaning that they have our patented Tri-Cam locking system inside of them, would be painted a very neutral beige in color.
Wait, you got away from me. They have what inside them?
They have our patented Tri-Cam locking system, and basically, JR, that is...
Oh, okay, the special doors, you mean.
Yeah, the actual... a standard ISO shipping container is going to have basically exterior rods on the outside. They look a lot like the back of a tractor trailer van that you manipulate to close the doors.
Right.
We have taken security, which is what we specialize in as far as shipping containers go, and moved it all to the inside of the container.
Okay.
So that there is There are three interior locking rods that are 1-inch in steel that engage the top, bottom, and side of the container, so it locks up at three different points inside of it, which is what makes movement in containers different.
Now, people can get the entry level would be the container with the locking mechanism on the outside, correct?
Right. They would typically have a lock box, which gives someone somewhere to conceal a padlock to make it inaccessible for just cutting off.
Right, right. So there's two ways. You can get the basic container with the standard factory locking mechanism or the upgrade. Well, you've got a whole proprietary door that you built on there, right?
Yes, absolutely. Now, anything that would actually be a Mobile Mini brand container, again, that would be the step up with the interior locking system, is going to have a choice of a couple different door systems. It's going to be the one I was explaining with the exterior rods. Those are hollow rods on the exterior of the container
right. That
you manipulate, requires some bending and twisting to get into. Or, of course, then we have what we call our premium style doors. Again, has the exact same type of security. However, it's a little easier to get into. We've eliminated those exterior bars, and we've added just one waist-high lever, which makes it more accessible to get in and out of quickly.
Well, what I tell people when it comes to these containers, if you get the security door upgrade, the only way you're going to get into these things without a key is with a cutting torch.
Yes, sir.
And most burglars, and I've been investigating crimes for longer than you've been alive, most burglars don't drag along welding equipment with them. That's highly unusual.
Right, exactly.
So a pair of bolt cutters or a hacksaw maybe, but not welding equipment.
Sure.
Well, that's fantastic. Now let's talk a little bit about these offices that you guys, now, do you start out with a container, or is this a fresh new structure has been built?
Well, you know, we have a couple of different kinds of offices. We have one that's called a ground-mounted security office, and basically it looks a whole lot like a container.
Mm-hmm.
And this particular type of unit would sit directly on the ground, much like a container. It's going to have an HVAC unit on one end. It's going to have electricity run to it, and it's also going to have, you know, tiled floors, a textured drywall on the walls, that type of thing.
Insulation in the walls and
insulation,
the ceiling.
Absolutely. Now, this particular unit isn't fitted with plumbing. We do have something that looks more like a mobile trailer, which is what we call a mobile office. And those particular units would require stairs to get into. They're actually up on tires, just like a mobile trailer would be.
Right.
And those do come with or without a restroom facility, depending on your preference. And we even have some that have a small kitchenette.
Well, like I say on my website, if you get the one with the restroom and a kitchenette, all you need is a shower and
right.
It's home sweet home, isn't it?
Exactly.
Well, any competent plumber, I think, could put a flush commode in one of these units. That doesn't look like it's anything too terribly difficult. Now, we can deliver these things anywhere within the lower 48. Is that accurate?
Yes, sir. Absolutely. We have stores all over the continental U.S. And even some overseas. So we would be accessible for this particular instance. You're right, in the lower 48. And it would just be a matter of transportation at that point.
This is an international show. I got people listening in Australia and New Zealand and Canada and the United Kingdom. But between internet and satellite, people all over the planet are listening to you and I talk right now. So... Here's how this will go down, ladies and gentlemen. If you call my toll-free number, 866-965-3007, during normal business hour central time, I can find out what your needs are, and I'll be talking to Angela, and we'll get pricing for whatever you want delivered wherever you need it delivered to. Would that be a good way to put this, Angela?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. I've already had one customer I've been working with, and it turned out he wasn't going to be getting one right at this time, but it was a good project for me to have a dry run.
Absolutely.
And get used to this whole procedure. It's really pretty simple. And it's a here's what I tell people, and people always want to know the cost. I was at Sam's Warehouse about a year ago, and they had a little plastic yard storage building out in front on display. It was maybe 10 by 10 or 10 by 12 feet. $900 for this little plastic yard storage house.
Wow.
Yeah, wild,
and
right.
That doesn't sound very secure at all.
No, it's not. It's just a little plastic yard storage building, a place to put your rakes and shovels and wheelbarrows and so forth for taking care of the lawnmower. So compared to something like that, these look very economical. And here's what I tell people, Angela. This is the least expensive secure storage that money can buy. And it's instant. You make
Absolutely.
A phone call, you know, take care of the delivery situation, and next thing you know, it's showing up at your site.
Absolutely.
Okay. We don't have any calls. I thought there might be a call or two, but people are just sitting there listening to us talk about these connexes. On these ones that are set up as offices, is there any choice of colors on these?
Well, it kind of depends on which offices you're talking about. Now, we have the mobile offices that I was telling you that were fixed for plumbing. Those are a white in color, and they have a blue trim. The ground mount security offices, however, those are the same neutral color as the mobile mini containers I was talking about. However, we could potentially paint those if someone was in need of having a specific color for whatever reason.
Well, there'd be an extra charge, but they may need a specific
color.
And it would be a nice professional job and get you exactly the color people need if that's
exactly.
one of their requirements. Now, the show before, our guest before us, we were talking about concrete domes and making something EMP-proof. This mm-hmm. is probably something that hasn't come up in your career yet, Angela, but some of my listeners are concerned about electromagnetic pulse, which can be generated in numbers of ways. The sun can do it with coronal mass ejection. There can be devices set off by human beings that would create a magnetic pulse that would knock out anything that had transistors, diodes, and capacitors. And I must tell you, ladies and gentlemen, a metal box, which is what we're talking about here, these containers, you're just about 90% of the way there to having something that could be very EMP-proof just by making sure you've got... shutters for the windows, if you had windows, and that the doors were steel, and you would have a very nice container to protect anything electronic from that kind of threat. So that's something people need to keep in mind, too. Now, typically, Angela, once somebody places an order, what would be the turnaround time to get something delivered?
Actually, on a container, it's fairly quick, depending on where it's going to be transported. I would say 3 days to a week max.
Okay.
Sometimes turnaround is almost immediate, and we can get something out to you the very next day.
Right. And, of course, delivery charges are based on zip code and
Absolutely.
Availability.
Mm-hmm.
But these diesel fuel costs some money, and, of course, it's going to vary by zip code.
Sure.
But it's reasonable. Considering the size and the weight of these things, I think it's very reasonable. Break coming up. Angela, hold on, everybody. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
And now here's more of John Moore on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Back to the show. It is Sunday, the 9th day of May, 2010. Angela, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here, JR.
Well, let me tell you what we did here at my place to give some seismic and wind resistance to our containers that we got on my premises. We built some piers that go below the frost line, concrete piers with steel reinforcement.
Mm-hmm.
Approximately 2 feet in diameter, and they go down a good 3 feet with lots of steel. And then at the top of each pier, we put a steel plate approximately 12 by 12 inches welded to the rebar. And then these piers were set up exactly 8 feet on center across and 20 feet long. And actually, in one of the, we did a couple of installations. In one installation, we had, let's see, 3, 6, 9 of these piers.
Mm-hmm.
8 feet, 8 feet, 8 feet, and then 20 feet, and 20 feet. So that these four containers were placed on top of the piers right next to each other. The containers were welded to each other, and then the containers were also welded to the piers.
Wow.
So this block of four containers, I think would withstand tornado force winds.
And I felt that way.
Yeah, we're pretty confident of that. The same thing applies to earthquakes.
Mm-hmm.
They may bounce around, but we think they'll bounce around intact and not be damaged severely by any earthquake that we can imagine.
Oh.
So it was a good little project, and we're real pleased with the way it turned out. And I think we achieved our goal of having seismic resistance and wind resistance to a very high degree. And the reason I mention this is that any general contractor can do the same thing.
Yeah.
We had these piers all done. We hired a company with a really big crane to come here and lift these things, and it was a project involving, I guess, about 8 men.
Mm-hmm.
Pulling on ropes and cables to get these lifted into place and snugged up next to each other so they could be welded in place. It was a good one-day project, the final installation of these connexes in their their resting place there to be welded together.
Yeah.
I've also seen these configured to be fairly large buildings. Where people will build a concrete foundation and stack these containers and weld them together and make condos and apartments. And you've probably seen the photographs yourself.
Yeah,
have you seen
absolutely.
Them in person? I don't know.
I haven't actually seen any in person. There are some really neat applications on the Internet on several different locations that people have either made homes or outdoor living spaces, like a patio or by dismantling them. It's some very neat applications. I haven't quite heard of any that, you know, to the extent that you've done on your property, JR, but it sounds very impressive.
Well, it is impressive. And when I was in the Philippines 3 years ago, I saw these things being used as homes. And all they did there was just cut up open space where a window would go, but they didn't even put it in windows. They just had an open space for ventilation and light. And if it rained, you just got away from the windows.
Right. I guess that's what you have to do, right?
Yeah, the Philippines is an incredibly poor third world country. Where I was reading a newspaper while I was there that more than half of the national police force lives in squatters' quarters.
Really?
It's pretty amazing how poor a country can be. But these containers, they provide safe and secure housing for people that otherwise would be living underneath a plastic sheet tied between two trees.
Exactly.
So they certainly come through in a pinch in that regard. Now, we on these containers, the ones that are finished off as offices, how's the interior done?
The ground-mounted security offices have, we actually have a couple of different layouts. We have one layout is what we call an open bay, and basically that's just one long office, the length of the the ground-mounted security office or container. And those are going to have a tile floor and textured drywall. Now, the other option we have would be to have a ground-mounted security office that would be part office and part container, which also might be a nice application for some of your listeners.
Right.
And basically, we have those at a couple different sizes. Those are either 8 by 20s or 8 by 40s, very similar to the containers. And then 8 by 20 would be 10 feet of office space and 10 feet of storage, whereas the 8 by 40s is going to be 15 feet of office and 25 feet of storage.
Well, that certainly gives a lot of flexibility there, and there could be a separate entrance for the storage part.
Yes, sir. That's exactly how they work. They have one door that works very similar to what we were discussing earlier with containers, and then they would have a regular, you know, person-shaped door.
A man door.
Thank you. That's good. Think of man
door. It's okay. Okay, I know we got another break coming up here soon. We'll hear the music. What kind of insulation goes in the walls and the ceilings? Is it foam or?
I believe it is foam.
Okay, well, we got a break. Hold on, everybody.
Okay,
stay tuned.
Thanks so much. All right. Jim, we're back. This is J.R. Moore. It is Sunday, the 9th day of May, 2010. Angela, are you still there? Here, J.R., and I actually have an answer for that insulation that you had asked me for the break. The insulation, I misspoke. It's actually R13 wall insulation and R19 ceiling insulation in this particular unit.
All right. Well, that should do the job. What I want to emphasize to people is two things about what we're talking about here. Quality and price. I've been in some mobile homes, and I've worked on some, and they're put together with staples and cheap materials generally, you simply don't have the quality that you do for these little offices. These offices are first-class quality materials, and they're really tough and meant to withstand industrial usage as opposed to just a house where a family may live. So you get the best of both worlds. You get the high quality appearance, the good quality materials, and a toughness that you will not find in other portable shelters. Extreme toughness.
Absolutely. In fact, some of our largest clientele, actually, JR, is a construction company. So these are on construction sites and getting worked over pretty thoroughly on a job site, would definitely withstand personal use.
Yeah, construction workers aren't known to be gentle with doors and windows and floors, and it's about the toughest environment. It would be like being in a battle zone, basically, with these big rough guys in their boots and tools going in and out all the time.
Exactly.
So yeah, if they can withstand that, they can certainly withstand use around your ranch. Angela, I think we're going to wrap up our interview for today. I'm going to have you back soon, probably in 2 or 3 weeks.
Wonderful.
We'll talk more about these, and I really do appreciate your time.
Oh, well, thank you, J.R., for having me on. I very much enjoyed myself.
Thank you, Angela. And that was Angela with Mobile Mini, and of course I'm now representing Mobile Mini and helping people achieve their goals with safe and secure storage, instant survival shelters. It's certainly something people should consider when they're making their plans. If they need it, if you need it, and you need it right now, this is a way to accomplish that goal. Well, looking at the news this past week, the two big things in the news were this ongoing oil disaster down in the Gulf of Mexico. My God, this pipe is 5 feet in diameter, putting out, 200,000 barrels of oil a day or something like that. Unbelievable amount of oil coming out of there. And then, of course, what happened in the stock market last week? There was a lot of finger pointing. People saying, not me, it's the other guy. The gyrations in the market that are just very concerning, as well they should be. And even more concerning because we don't have any resolution as to why these things happened last week. The fat finger theory. Come on, give me a break. The fat finger theory is our sophisticated financial markets that vulnerable to one person pushing the wrong button on a computer keyboard someplace? I certainly hope not. And I hope there is some resolution that is real as opposed to some fabricated story to make us all feel good about what's happening and go back to sleep. So we'll find out. The markets, of course, open tomorrow morning, and everybody's going to be watching to see what's happening. A lot of concern about what's going on in Europe with Greece and some other countries that are Spain, I believe, is another one that's close to defaulting on debt, and how that could have a cascading effect. You know, places like Spain, like Portugal, for example. Portugal is a country on one hand, but Bill Gates' yearly income exceeds the yearly income of the entire country of Portugal. So it's amazing how some of these relatively small countries can have such a dramatic impact on world markets. It shows how vulnerable these markets are and shows how, in my opinion, people should be preparing to take care of themselves as opposed to depending on governments to do that for them. That's been my message for years. It will continue to be my message of is self-sufficiency, being ready to take care of yourself and your loved ones in every which way that you can think of, providing your own shelter, your own food, your own security, your own emergency medical treatment, being able to monitor the emergency medical radio frequencies, and so forth. You know, when you come close to meeting all those goals, you might be pleasantly surprised to see the level of confidence it gives you, the feeling of security that it gives you, knowing that no matter what happens, you're ready to meet those challenges and prevail. That's where your training comes in, your skills, your spiritual preparedness. All those things play into it. I recall when I was a young man, I was not an enthusiastic football player initially. I was recruited by a young man who would be my teammate, and we're still friends. Being a top athlete in track, a sprinter, the team wanted me to have. It was a small school, Herculaneum, Missouri, and they needed all the help they could get. So I was recruited to play football. But I recall showing up at summer camp, not knowing really anything about football, and learning the basic skills of being a football player, how to properly wear the equipment so that I would be protected, the rules of the game, and the skills of the game, all the various skills. And you build one block, building block on top of the next building block on top of the next building block, and do practice after practice, two practices a day. I didn't realize it at the time, but what these coaches were doing were making us into men. We thought we were out there having fun, which we were, but the coaches were making us into men. Those two brutal practices every day during summer, during the summer drills, and building these building blocks, building these skills, one skill on top of the other, and practice scrimmages and practice games, to the point when that we had our first game of the season, of the regular season. We had all the skills. We everything from the basics of our equipment and how it worked, to the basic skills of being a football player and knowing all the plays, knowing each other, knowing who we were and why we were there, all gave us the confidence to walk out in that field, actually run out in the field, confident that we could overcome and prevail against our adversaries. And the preparedness is the same way. It's having the spiritual preparedness, first of all, and acquiring the skills and knowing your equipment, knowing how your equipment functions to the finest, most minute details, and maintaining that equipment. That's all preparedness is skills and knowledge combined with supplies and equipment to get to the point where you know that no matter what happens, you're ready to deal with that eventuality, whether it's a earthquake or a flood or a tornado, hurricane, whatever it might be, forest fire, a financial collapse, brigands coming down the driveway, you're ready to deal with it because you've practiced, you have your equipment, you have your supplies, and you're very practiced at knowing all the basics that go into combining to becoming a prepared person. And that's where your training comes in. The purpose of training is to develop muscle memory and skills. So you don't need to think about, well, how do I balance this bicycle? No, it's not an issue anymore. You know how to ride the bicycle. How do I take the safety off this 1911 45 I got on my hip? Well, you've done it so many hundreds of times, presenting the 1911 45 caliber pistol and taking off the safety at the same time as it's coming out of the holster, that you don't need to think about it. You can be focused on the bad guy's eyes and hands. The bad guy's eyes tell you